It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm pleased to welcome to the show Sylvie Kahn, a professional organizer based in Urbana. The idea of a need for professional organizing is something that has caught hold with a general cultural need for decluttering, sort of in the material sense and also maybe the spiritual. I was lucky to make the acquaintance of Sylvie, who does this professionally and often offers the community the benefits of our neighbors' overflowing possessions. So I asked her about what she does, and here she is in person to talk about it. So Sylvie, welcome to Catch the Beat. How would you like to describe what you do as a professional organizer?
Professional organizers generally help people with their material things. They can also help people with time management, task management, and digital things, photos, files, email.
Tell me how you got into this work.
Well, going way back, the first thing I really remember about it is when I was in grade school organizing my mother's drawer of rubber bands and twistems and other old cords. Yep.
And other yep. And I have one of those drawers.
I understand that now people who are in the know don't call them junk drawers anymore. They call them utility drawers. I remember doing that, and probably not just once. It got pretty cluttered. And I enjoyed it. I never really gave it much thought. And then as a teen, my mother was someone who really liked things. She was not a materialist. It didn't matter if the things were particularly expensive, but she liked things and she had a problem getting rid of them. So every toy we ever had was up in the attic. And I remember once organizing the room that those toys were in. It took me my spare time for most of the summer. I've sort of always had an interest in it and enjoyed it. And as time wore on, I realized that that was not universal and that there are plenty of people who really don't like organizing things. They don't like clutter either, but they don't really like trying to get to grips with it. Meanwhile, this profession was materialized, this idea that somebody could get good at organizing and get good at helping other people be organized. And so in 2014, I started helping people on a paid basis. And that side of my professional work gradually grew, and I incorporated Sylvie Kahn LLC in 2022.
And you are going strong.
Yes, it's my full-time job.
Now, on your website, you have a phrase that caught my eye. It's never just about the stuff or the email or the time. And we're sensitive, we as in your business, to figuring out the circumstances that caused the challenge in the first place. So you come in on a philosophical level as well as a physical level. So talk a little bit about that.
There are many threads to it. There is a philosophical thread to it. There's an emotional thread to it and a psychological thread to it. So for example, I know from dealing with my own parents' house after we lost them. Sometimes people have too much stuff in their lives because they've lost someone. And dealing with that is terribly difficult. It can be better if there are several people involved. It can be better if the person that you lost lived a long, full life and died on their own terms. But it's not always like that. And even in those circumstances, it can be very difficult. For one thing, people struggle with the idea that they're honoring the person's memory by keeping the things, like my siblings and myself. If you're already establishing your own home, the last thing you need is more stuff. But what are you going to do with these things that were so precious to your parents, for example? There isn't an easy answer to that. Grappling with it is an important piece of what a good professional organizer will do. Because if the ultimate aim is not to accumulate too much from that experience, you have to work through what you're thinking about and what those things mean to you. And you have to try to keep in mind that longer end goal. And having someone neutral, professional, objective to help you with that can be useful.
You become a counselor.
I hasten to say that I'm not qualified in that respect. And one thing that sometimes happens is that people will come to me on the recommendation of a therapist, because if I work in partnership with that person, the therapist can offer their professional help with the emotional side, but I can be part of that team as well, helping someone with what I've come to understand about grief and loss.
You offer a wide range of services that cover a lot of specific circumstances. Give us an idea of when you are called in to help with something.
It's often associated with someone feeling overwhelmed. One reason someone might be overwhelmed is through grief. Another might be that they have an expansion in their professional world or in their family, and they know how they want to operate their lives, and they're just not managing it. Another reason people find themselves overwhelmed is if they're moving. I often get called in one of those circumstances. You know, I've gone back to work after my child was born. Everything at home is just going to heck. I can't keep on top of it anymore. I need you to come in and reset it. And then let's see if I can manage to go on with it the way it was. And if not, you know, maybe you can come back on a maintenance basis periodically and just get it back to where I want it to be. Moving has its own challenges. Most people have been involved in a move in some capacity. You don't want to pay to move things you don't want. So there tends to be this pressure to get it all figured out beforehand. Meanwhile, the move is approaching. Whatever the reason is for the move is becoming more salient. You've got a new job starting, or you have to get out of the place you're living, or you're paying a tremendous amount for where you're living and you can't do that anymore. So there again, we come back to these psychological or emotional matters, where having someone who can take an objective viewpoint and help you in the bigger picture can be useful.
Walk us through a typical project. Someone calls you and says, I'd like your help.
The first thing I do is I go over and see what there is. So I'm talking about typically a project where I'm organizing things, though the same could apply to email or photos or time or tasks. I walk through what we're actually going to be dealing with, and I talk over with the person what their objective is, and I try to get some idea of what that person is like. People, for example, differ in terms of whether they are more visually oriented, more physically oriented. They touch things, they move. Some people are more oriented to hearing, discussing, reading, and that then helps me help them more effectively. With that in mind, I make a proposal based on what we've discussed at that initial consultation, laying out who, what, when, where, why, how much. And then I send that to the person, I email that to them, and they can consider it. And if they want to go ahead, they sign and we get started. It differs a great deal how much time people want to spend. Some people want me to come once or twice a week until it's done. Some people want me to come for a short session every week or every other week, sort of indefinitely. Sometimes if there's a move involved, it's going to be very intense for a few weeks and then it's going to be done. The projects can be one session and they can go all the way up to, I have people that I've been seeing for 5 or 6 years. And for those people, it's not because we can't seem to get to the end of their stuff. It's more that they need some ongoing support of some kind. I know a woman who's in the same sort of field who called her business spare daughter. So sometimes I can come in to that situation and I really don't know what they're going to ask me to do. It might well be organizing something. It might well be helping with a computer. And that's part of the broad umbrella of what a professional organizer can do, which is just to come in and help you get to grips with the challenges of living in the world.
Organizing digital files is a completely different kind of thing. How do you go into that, say, if someone says, I'm overwhelmed by all my photographs, what do I do?
I'm part of a national organization called the National Association for Productivity and Organizing Professionals. And there are people, there are members of that organization who do nothing but organize photos. So it is a big issue now, and it's so easy for us to take photos and to store them. Plus, we are in a position where we're increasingly able to store the archival photos that we have from our families. For photos, like any other project, the first and most important thing is to think about what you want at the end. Do you want to keep them all and just be able to find them? Do you want to create three fabulous albums that have only the greatest hits from your life, or say from your parents' lives, or someone that you're particularly interested in? Then that dictates what steps you're going to have to take to get there. I knew with someone who decided when she downsized the family home, she was going to end up with four albums. Well, she had 10,000 photos. That meant if each album was going to have so many photos in it, she knew that for every photo she kept, she was going to have to discard some. And that's a powerful method. I've used that in other contexts as well. If you only want to devote so much space in your home to something, then one way to do that is to say, well, I've got this much space, I've got twice as much. So one of every two of these things has got to go. The thing about photos, and this also applies to other digital assets, files, particularly file and folder structures, is that broadly speaking, there's no way but through. If you want to do a comprehensive job of it, someone's going to have to look at them all. Now, you may have general parameters that you can give to someone. I'm in charge and I work with other people who come in and out depending on the project. And I have people who are well-versed in this kind of work. If you say, I don't want any pictures of landscapes, the only pictures I'm keeping are going to be pictures with people in, someone else can do that. For all of these projects, the person asking for the help is the most scarce resource. So as much as possible, you want to help that person focus on the things that only they can do. If it's photos and they want to look at every photo, it's about facilitating time and space for them to be able to do that, and taking away other things if you can, so that other things that someone else can do. When it comes to stuff, it's the same sort of thing. Don't pack your own stuff. If you're under time pressure, you have to make the decisions. That's what's most important for you. Other people can pack it. Other people are specialists in packing it.
That's a really interesting thought about this whole process, is that really how much of this is necessary that you do, and how much of it is better that you get someone else to do it. I mean, and that goes, another word that you use that really struck me is productivity. So that's a very large umbrella term. But yeah, productivity has so much to do with the feeling of being overwhelmed, which, as you say, that's probably the central factor behind anyone needing to clean out their life. I just need white space on my walls sometimes so I can think. So what are your guidelines for helping people understand the decisions they'll have to make to be more productive in their lives?
Productivity is a terrible word.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of those words that it's the best thing we've been able to come up with to describe a particular goal. It just sounds terrible because it sounds like life is all about how much you can produce, which in turn is how much can you achieve? How much can you show the world that you've conquered, that you've mastered, that you've got a long train of letters behind your name or accolades from your peers or whatever it is. When I work with people in this area, the first thing I have to help them understand is that you define it. To me, productivity is finishing the day with the sense that I've helped people, that I've engaged with the world, that I've balanced my own health and well-being with challenges and demands placed on me. For someone else, it might well be I've made a lot of money, or I churned a lot of email, I have an empty inbox, I got through my to-do list. No judging. Like these other things we've been talking about, what's important is to figure out what it is for the client that's important. So I've been working with one person who came to me with an inordinate amount of email, backlog of email. She wanted to deal with her email. As I worked with her, it turned out it wasn't so much that she wanted to deal with the email. She didn't care about having an empty inbox. What was really bothering her was that she wasn't delivering a quality service to people because the email was so overwhelming, she wasn't dealing with it at all. So for her, productivity was being responsive when it mattered. It was being available away from her email when it mattered. She does not have an empty inbox. I guarantee if you called her today, she hasn't had an empty inbox all this time that I've been working with her. She is much happier in the job that she's doing, and she is much more effective in the job that she's doing because I have helped her focus on what really matters about that email. For example, identifying the ones that really have an impact, identifying the ones from that only she can deal with, identifying the things that are just being sent to her because someone's required to send them to her. Productivity, in its sort of blanket sense, covers a lot of ground. And to me, it is to do with your values and how you want to spend your time and what kinds of things will give you satisfaction, and working out ways and methods to achieve that satisfaction and feeling that you spent your time well.
A question that I often come back to, I heard it once in a sermon and I thought, wow, that is useful. It's first things first. Uh-huh. And understanding what really comes first in your life. If a child is sick at school, yes, that comes first. That's easy. But then all the things that you have to shove aside and remembering where you are when you come back. I write probably 5 to-do lists every single day that sort of develop over understanding, okay, this is how much time there is. It always takes twice as long as I think it's going to.
I'm a big fan of using Post-its for that purpose. I am a list fan. You may be familiar with a book called The Checklist Manifesto. It's by Atul Gawande, who is a doctor.
Oh, well, he writes about end-of-life decisions.
He does. Well, it's a great book. If you like checklists, and one thing that it does not do is say, write absolutely everything down, which for me was, oh, come on now. Isn't that the point? Where's the fun if you don't write everything? I mean, if you don't write it all down, you can't check it off when you've done it. Over time, I have developed a system of lists that relies on small Post-its. That's a whole other conversation. One of the things I like about them is that they facilitate that revision that you're talking about. So I have a list of Post-its of the things that I'm hoping to do today. I had a cancellation today. I've got 3 hours this afternoon with nothing in it. So I can look ahead. I can look to my master list. I can look other places, and I can pull in Post-its from those things for consideration as to how I'm going to spend that time. First things first, he didn't make it up, but it's one of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is a Stephen Covey book. One of his first books, I think, and it must now be 20 or 30 years old. And that's one of the habits, is first things first. Prioritization, in turn, is linked with values. Your point about a sick kid, most people that have children put their children pretty high, the health and well-being of their children pretty high. I remember a lesson in prioritization I had when I had a tiny baby at home. I had 15 minutes while that baby was sleeping. I could clean up the kitchen or I could have a shower. I was not going to get both of them done. And I had to decide right now, because otherwise I wasn't going to get either of them done. Prioritization is key to productivity. And I work with people on their values on that basis. A lot of people have never asked themselves, what do you value? And I'm not talking about human life. There are perhaps certain things that you could say almost everybody values. I'm talking about, do you value productivity? Do you value an artistic experience? Do you value nurturing yourself? Do you value connection with other people? People vary a lot on that basis. And understanding that about yourself guides so much else of what you do, including how you organize your home, how you organize your time, how you prioritize what things you're going to spend your energy on and what things you're going to either just let go or ask other people to do.
Well, and then when I'm thinking about when I'm my happiest, you know, what would be my most satisfying day today, the things that you can't put on a to-do list are things like relaxing, delight, laughter.
Yes.
And those are things requires a certain quality of my own thoughts to get to the point where I can really, in a very focused and directed way, do things that matter effectively. Mm-hmm. Because there will be days when I just dither all day long. I just can't get anything done. And people say meditate, and I'm not very good at meditating. So do you have any thoughts about that, just about how to improve the quality of how you spend the time that you do have so that you appreciate what you do rather than lamenting what you don't do?
One of the most important things is about spending time. One of the most important things about how you spend your time is to cultivate in yourself the ability to change a habit. You can schedule time for doing nothing or for doing things that delight you. For example, you can say, well, tonight I'm going to work on my craft, whatever that might be, metalwork or art or sewing or golf. I'm just going to do that tonight. One reason that people don't do that, people struggle to permit themselves to do things that they love. They'll do something that they love to do, and then they'll punish themselves afterward for doing it. Not having the behavior literature at my fingertips, I do have my lived experience and the experience of people I work with very much in my mind when I say punishing is far less effective than rewarding.
And in this case, punishing is usually just beating myself up inside my own head. Look what I did. Look what I didn't do.
Exactly. You are the most effective punisher and rewarder of yourself. And when I talk about rewards, I'm not even talking about, oh, I'm going to buy something, or I'm going to go out to dinner, or I'm going to sit and read a magazine or look at my social media. I'm talking about stopping for a moment and saying to yourself, that's great. What I just did, that's what I want to do. And I want to do it again tomorrow. Well done. We're not taught to do that in our culture. We're not taught to do that. And when I say this to people, particularly people I'm working with long term, I try to reiterate this. It takes months for people to really acknowledge that they are permitted to do that, to give themselves that positive feedback. Well, if you don't give yourself that positive feedback, you don't have a hope of changing a habit. And if you can't change a habit, if clutter is your problem, if an out-of-control inbox is your problem, if not getting to grips with organizing or decluttering jobs is your problem, as long as you keep punishing yourself, you're never going to get there. I work with people across the spectrum of what I do, catching them when they say, oh, I screwed up. Oh, I can't believe I did that. Oh, Sylvie, you did it again. That kind of negative reinforcement is just destructive. Because then the next time you set out to, you know, just take these little tentative steps to try to improve what you did last time and then screw it up, if you land on yourself like a ton of bricks, well, why would you try that again? And we understand this with dogs and other pets. We understand this with people that have worked with horses, understand this. If you've worked with small children, you understand this. It's all about leading on into the path that you want this other being to go. Why don't we do this with ourselves?
Do you have ways of urging people to change those habits of beating ourselves up?
Well, a mother of two boys, I'm an excellent nag. I try to gently and constructively bring it to their attention. If I hear somebody say, I can't believe I didn't do that. I said I was going to do that after you left last week and I didn't do anything. I'll try to say something like, what was in your way? What were you thinking about that stopped you from doing it? What's something different you could try next time that might give you a better chance of getting it done? What's a smaller version of whatever it is we're reaching for here? Can you break it down into something that seems easy and that you know you will do? And then I remind them that whenever they take that first step, to shower themselves with positive feedback. People talk about hoarding, and of course there are people out there who are clinically defined as hoarders. There are a lot of steps short of that. And there are other, they may not be classified as disorders, but there are other problems people have that contribute. One of them is consumerism. We get so much feedback that buying things is important. And you know what? Buying things is fun.
I saw on your website that you routinely run focus groups to give you feedback on the organizing process. What has this taught you over time?
One of the most important things I can glean from a focus group is what value they place on the service. When I first looked up professional organizing in Champaign County, I think there were one or maybe two people already registered as organizers. A lot of people only have a hazy idea of what a professional organizer does. I wanted to price my service at a place that remunerated me for my ability and also fit with people's expectations of what they would pay. One thing I've done in focus groups is I set out a bunch of different professions on cards, and then I asked people to put the cards in order of how much they would pay. Early on, my first focus group, the main lesson was just about everyone has too much stuff and isn't sure what to do about it. Furthermore, that they didn't know that there was a way to get help. Just about everyone in my focus groups has touched a situation where they were dealing with a home full of things that were important to somebody else. So that was what kind of tuned me into this important aspect that there's almost always some kind of emotional overlay.
I just want to thank you for coming and spending some of your valuable time with us. It's fascinating, the ideas of professional organizing, and it really covers a very wide spectrum. So thank you, Sylvie.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Coach.
That wraps up our time for this week's Catch the Beat. Thank you, Sylvie Kahn, for your expertise and your insights about professional organizing. Anyone who'd like to get in touch with Sylvie about a project you might have can find her at her email, Sylvie, S-Y-L-V-I-E, at SylvieKahn, SylvieKahn.com, and her website, www.sylviekahn.com. I recommend wandering her website. It has a very useful list of circumstances when the services of a professional organizer may be just what you need. All past episodes of Catch the Beat are archived at weft.org under our public affairs listings. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. And thanks always to the others on the crew at Weft who keep us on air. Drive out to the radio tower in bad weather to keep it operating. Archive the shows, straighten out the bugs, and produce their own shows with the best of community savvy for both music and public affairs. Thank you for listening on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. See you next time.